Welcome to Packet Pushers Heavy Networking, still probably the best networking podcast you can get for your money. And now with 10 years of podcasting history behind us, we might actually be getting together. Today's show is sponsored by Alkira Networks. Now, Alkira is a multi-cloud networking company. They're actually putting together a new way of doing multi-cloud networking that's probably different from some of the others. And it's a show worth listening to. Now, Ethan, we've just come off the recording and I thought it went pretty well. What was unique is that they actually brought two customers. These are people who use the product in the early stage, in the preview beta, and actually got it working for real life and helped them solve the multi-cloud problem.
And the big deal to me is they both told their story and use cases for Alkira is that it took away a lot of the tedious, meaningless, kind of pointless stuff that you have to do to get cloud and multi-cloud networking working, which was interesting because all of us engineers like to nerd out and geek out about this stuff. And yet they make the point that with Alkira, it just takes away all of that fussiness and lets you move on to bigger and better things, and then explicitly made the case of how it worked for them.
Towards the end of the show, we really started to get into a really good discussion, and they made the point that actually it's easier to use than Visio. Now, yes. The cynic in me sort of leapt up, and sort of, but they actually said yes. And I've seen the interface, and it is very good. It does look really good to me. But what I also liked was I was able to ask Atif, you know, is all the stuff that's going on underneath visible to me? And he assured me that it was. So And the people that we speak to who have done multi-cloud talk about the horror stories of MPLS and direct connections and route distributions, and there's route limits here, and this cloud has this many routes, and this, and you've got to redistribute and mapping VERFs and microsegmenting. And Alkira is a product that takes you down that path and solves it for you in a way that you might not expect. So tune in to today's show. Thanks very much to Alkira Networks. And I open up by asking Atif Khan, who's the Chief Technology Officer and of Alkira, who actually one of the inventors of the product. What is it that Alkira actually is?
So Alkira is a cloud networking startup. Alkira is reinventing how multi-cloud networks are built and deployed today. We are delivering the world's first unified multi-cloud network with integrated network and security services with governance, all delivered on demand and as a service. Our customers can provision their multi-cloud network and services with simple point-and-click operations in minutes. Our solution, as we say, is a game changer, but our guests, Matt and William, are very familiar with our service. So I'm sure everyone would like to hear from them what their cloud journey has been like, challenges they face, and how they see Alkira reinventing the multi-cloud network.
All right, so Alkira is a multi-cloud networking product. It's got a unique twist on it, as we'll uncover during the show. It's not unlike other multi-cloud networking products. It actually has its own VNF, has its own tool set that you add to it in the form of software that standardizes the functions across all the cloud. That's my take on it. And as Atif said, we've got two of his customers on the show to tell us about their stories. William and Matt, thanks so much for joining us on the show. Let's start off with you, Matt. You've got an organization and you started to go through this transformation to this multi-cloud. You've obviously got an organization that's going through the digital transformation. What's that sort of transformation story been like for you over the last few years?
What I would say is, you know, our journey really started about 5 or 6 years ago. And, you know, our businesses really wanted to better leverage technology to digitally enable every aspect of their operations. And so what we were starting to see was a very significant increase in demand for cloud services, modern applications, SaaS applications, those kind of things. And we recognized pretty early on that our core infrastructure just really wasn't ready for this change. And so we started a push to really modernize that base and prepare for the growth. So, you know, we put in 4 North Stars that kind of helped guide our change. And they were The internet is the network, the cloud is the data center, identity is the perimeter, and any device is a work device.
Oh, big words. Those are big words, right?
they're big words. Again, the idea is they're to help guide us, right? As long as you're headed towards those goals, that's the direction we want to go.
And William, what about your story? Is it sort of similar? I mean, that sounds pretty much similar to what most people are doing, but yours might be different.
Yeah, that's really similar to sort of our transformation. The one thing I would add is, you know, when we think about, okay, we're delivering applications. Applications are being delivered faster, you know, and cloud enables you to do that. And then the whole benefit of, you know, being elastic, you know, growing and, you know, that whole pay as you go, you know, we don't want to pay for things that we don't have to pay for. We want to pay for what we're using. So sort of transforming that model of our CapEx back to OpEx.
So really, it sounds like the fairly traditional, I want to be in the cloud story because of elasticity, pay-as-you-go, flexibility, speed, and you want to get out of the fixed assets that you've got into the flexible asset type of model. So they're fairly traditional sort of cloud migration reasons, I guess, at a high level. Is that fair?
Yeah, and delivering your applications faster than your competitor, in your market. Mm-hmm. So whoever has the better, more innovative app in the app store, they're going to be the one that's winning, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, that's not my business, but I'm going to believe you when you say it. So Matt, you're working for Koch Industries. And I think you said to me that once you started to get into the multi-cloud, you suddenly ran into a whole bunch of pain. And I want to talk a little bit about that because I don't think we cover enough what's wrong with multi-cloud networking so that people find out why they need a multi-cloud networking tool.
Yeah, so that's absolutely true. And I would say it's not even just the multi-cloud, right? It's even in a single cloud, right? So we started our journey with AWS as our preferred cloud partner. And, we kind of built these things on our own. And when I say these things, I mean the on-ramps from our network into the cloud. It started with an experiment that we did in a co-location. And what we found was that worked pretty well, but the real problem was moving large amounts of data out of our data center. And so we built our first, we call them transport hubs, essentially cloud on-ramps and central routing locations, right, in our four core North American data centers. And we brought in, 10 gig circuits for direct connects. We built a underlay that connected all of our data centers. And, this was months of work and millions of dollars. And it was all physical infrastructure that kind of tied us again back to those four data centers as the rest of our network was really decentralizing towards more, direct cloud applications and SaaS applications and things like that.
So you kind of end up with that situation where you start building direct connects that your foot gets nailed to the floor. It's actually not flexible.
That's absolutely right. And so what we did to help with that is we took those physical footprints and we started to build them out virtually in the cloud. And again, this was the real challenge here, right? Is we had to learn how to do networking in a virtual environment like AWS, right? Where it's not your traditional enterprise networking. Things work differently. There's different roadblocks and bandwidth constraints and things that we learned through trial and error. It took us a long time and quite a bit of pain.
It sounds to me like you took the traditional networking features and then brought them to the cloud. And then sort of 6 months or and a few million dollars later, you realize that actually trying to do MPLS routers in the cloud with direct connection doesn't really work.
Yeah, I would say that it was certainly better than where we started, but for sure, there were challenges, right? From setting it up. So we were on actually multiple networks across our businesses, and so we actually ended up running multiple transport hub instances in the cloud, and then had to replicate that again in multiple regions, and that just became an operational challenge for us.
So, William, what about your problems? Were they roughly similar or different?
Yeah, pretty similar. I think like out of the gate, when cloud started really, catching a lot of momentum, we, like most companies, you're probably going to set up a VPN out of your own data centers just to, we started out in AWS like most companies, but just get a taste of cloud. And then, once you start considering scale and you start considering performance, we went the colo approach. So getting well connected in those colos. And like Matt was saying, the direct connect isn't always a simple and flexible thing because you have AWS Direct Connect, but then you have Microsoft Express Route, and then you have Google Interconnect. You have all their own ways of doing this. So when you start looking at that, you start looking at your physical footprint that you start building in these colos. And, before too long, it ends up looking like your data centers that you already have. And then maybe you have leadership at some point saying, hey, I thought we were getting into cloud to get out of the data center business. Why are we, building the exact same thing?
So are you actually saying that like when you use the direct connect features of Google Cloud, Azure and AWS, they're not actually the same. They're radically different. So you actually end up with all these hacks and workarounds?
Yeah, absolutely. You can either, like if you're familiar with like the Megaports or the Equinix you know, sort of environments, you can sort of do two things. You can get them in, you know, physical or virtual flavors. So you can basically get a physical direct connect where you're basically in your cage and you're like, hey, and you throw your patch cable over and they patch it into another patch panel and that's your connection. Very physical. But then they have something like, you know, maybe like an Equinix Cloud Exchange where you, you know, provision physical ports and then you have to go and create your logical circuits on top of it. But yeah, all of so it requires
VLANs or MPLS VERPs or something like that.
Well, and again, I think, you know, that's just kind of the tip of the iceberg too for the problem, right? Because that's just your physical on-ramp into the cloud. Once you get into the cloud, then, you know, VNets are different from VPCs or different from, I'm not even sure what Google calls theirs, right? But all of the configuration options and limitations, and you know how you connect to the internet and how you route between VPCs, that's all different between the clouds, and that's something that our people had to continuously learn, and they ran into the problems of the limitations there.
Yeah, that's just layer two. That's layer two. We're not even into the BGP, you know, between the cloud and our facility yet. So
you're describing all of this as a problem, not a fantastic opportunity for technical growth.
So I think that, you know, the way that we see that is, yes, there's a lot of deeply technical people do see that as opportunity, and it's fun. I'm not that deep of a network person myself. And as we start to think about what that looks like from a long-term operational capability, what we see is, you know, different people grow at different rates. And right now, we're somewhat limited on how many people can really support what we have in the cloud.
And a lot more operational overhead too. So in the colos, you know, you have all this physical gear. You got to remember, you have a life cycle for all that gear. You're still dealing with the same end of sale, end of support, and all those things with all these different vendors, just the same as you are on premises.
So Atif, is this the sort of stuff you see with all of your customer bases? This to me sounds fairly conventional. It's like all people who run into the multi-cloud run into these sorts of problems, or is there something else here?
No, absolutely. Like, we are seeing it across the board. Now, as both Matt and William said, like, every cloud is different. So now you have to learn like every cloud, you have to build expertise in every cloud. And it becomes like exponentially complex when you have to meet all your governance requirements, all your security requirements, all of that. So we realized this, that this was a big problem out there since cloud has been happening and multi-cloud is now happening also. And nobody is going to argue that. So we came out with this solution where we are delivering this multi-cloud network as a service. So from a customer's point of view, you don't have to go and learn like the details or in-depth details of the underlying constructs of any of these clouds. So you just consume it as a service, come to our portal, give us the requirements as far as your connectivity is concerned, your services are concerned, which you are moving into the cloud. And we make it happen for you. And it's global. So you don't have to worry about like inter-region or global routing between regions, segmentation. So all of that is now abstracted from the customer and you consume it as a service and we provide you high availability with SLAs and stuff.
So, okay, you describe Alkira as basically an abstraction layer. That is, I'm talking to Alkira, and Alkira is talking to AWS and so on for me. So does that mean when I talk to Alkira, Alkira then consumes like AWS cloud native stuff? Or is there an Alkira VNF that's sitting in my AWS VPC? How exactly is the networking overlay? Well, I don't know if it's accurate to describe it as an overlay, but we'll think of it as an overlay here. How is that all stitched together for me?
So Ethan, you bring up a very good point. So yes, you can think of it as an overlay. So what we are doing is, we are building an overlay on top of these different cloud providers' networks. So we are building a end-to-end network with services in there. So you said, is it just an abstraction layer? It's a bit more than just abstraction layer. So what we have done is we have built a multi-tenant platform where you can bring your, let's say, own services, third-party services. You can consume cloud-native services. We're also working on building some of our own services, networking services there. So you can also consume those services. So you connect your on-prem to our cloud, which is sitting on top of multiple clouds, and then from there you connect to where your workloads are running, let's say in VPCs or VNets. But then you also have to take into consideration that networking or connectivity, it's not just about like connecting you to a VPC where your workload is running. There is a network inside of a VPC also. So it's when you talk about end-to-end networking, you have to have connectivity to the VPCs. You have to have information about like what's going on in the VPCs. You may require some security policies in there as well. So you have to build one network, which you manage in one way. You decide like what type of services you need in the middle, whether you need like a firewall in the middle, you need like a load balancer in the middle. How you want to consume these services depends on your use cases. You may have a use case where your traffic is, let's say, coming in from the internet and it's destined to your servers, which are sitting in the cloud. So you may want like a load balancer, but you may not need like a load balancer for traffic coming in from your on-prem going to consume like one of your applications, which is running on a workload.
So email doesn't need a load balancer.
Exactly.
But you've got a web server that's in the cloud, and maybe it's accessing the data in the back end, which is on-prem. That's becoming increasingly common. You have different service requirements. Sometimes you need a load balancer. Sometimes you need a application inspection. Sometimes you want to be able to put a flow engine in there so you can get some visibility. There's all different possibilities that the overlay network can give you.
Exactly. And now you can think of this overlay network with kind of built-in virtual colo type of constructs where you're spinning up these services. Mm-hmm. And now it's a collection of like multiple of these virtual colos which span the globe. And they have full mesh overlay connectivity between them. You have fully routed, segmented network between them.
But do I actually deal with that full mesh, or is that just the service that's being offered to me happens to be connected that way and I get to leverage that?
You know, Ethan, the great thing is that it's all consumed as a service. So you come in, you say that these are the regions I want my, let's say these, we call these cloud exchange points, which you can think of as kind of virtual colos. You choose the regions you want these CXPs in. You connect to clouds. You bring your on-prem, or we help you bring the on-prem connectivity into these CXPs. And then you get like an instant global routed network between these CXPs without you having to do anything as far as like transits are concerned, VRFs are concerned, how your traffic is going to go through services, inter-region, inter-cloud, whatnot. It's all consumed as a service. You just come in to our portal, consume it there. You point and click, draw out your network, click a provision, and your whole global network. And I'm not kidding you. And you can ask, I'm sure like Matt and William can give you more insight into it. And the whole network comes up in like, I would say less than an hour.
I would say that a lot of times, like with what I've seen in the past with just different solutions and how you get some type of functionality like this to work is I'm usually going into a cloud provider and I'm like installing something from like the marketplace or putting an agent on some VM or doing that like maybe on a per VNet or VPC basis. This kind of works the other direction. So what I would do if I want to bring in VNets from Microsoft Azure, for instance, I would start on the Alkira side. You know, I'm putting in my service principal or whatever my authentication method is. And then voila, you know, magically my VNet appears and I have connectivity. And then I can start creating segment. It's almost like GNS3 or EVNG for those familiar with those emulating software, right? So you're clicking and dragging something on the screen and connecting it, except usually, you know, with EVNG, obviously, you got to go in and configure the network connectivity between all these devices. With Alkira, you sort of like click and drag, and then the networking just comes up between everything. So it's a little easier, I guess.
And And I think that's the first thing that people will notice, right? And getting back to Ethan's original question around, you know, kind of the overlay and the abstraction, is that's really how, you know, so our lead network engineer, that's really how he articulates it, is that underlay is completely abstracted. And that's the part that we had so many challenges with, right? Learning how that underlay worked and the and the limitations and things that went with it. And, you know, what took us in our first virtual transport hub, it took us about 6 months to go from, you know, the, hey, let's do this, to, okay, we're ready to run our first production workload. And then, you know, during some beta testing with Alkira, we were able to do that entire process in an afternoon.
I think importantly, what you've sort of glossed over here is that that process means you don't have to have a Google Cloud expert, an Azure expert, and an AWS expert on staff to troubleshoot what's happening underneath. Or at the very least, you don't need them on day one. You might be able to delay the upskilling process in the longer term. You may actually in the later on want to do something in that space, but you get to choose and to be in control of that, it would seem to me.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the beauty of the SaaS model, right? Is that it does take a lot of that heavy lifting out of it. So, you know, kind of back to the idea that, you know, we don't necessarily make money by running networks. Networks are a thing that we have to have, and how we get to our application workloads and things like that. But today it's a struggle for our operational group to really understand a lot of the differences between the various different clouds, and you know, this type of platform just really lets us move those people up the stack more towards value and less towards the bits and bytes of the actual, you know, underlying products.
I would take that even a step further. So when the first time I used this product, it was through this thing called a private preview, where basically I come in and, you know, they give you a full week. They give you the keys and let you test for a full week, you know. So this was when they were still in stealth. So I come in and, you know, I had a few solutions engineers in the room with me, like I think someone from like product management, and they had this packet of like instructions, and they were going to like walk me through setting all this stuff up. I had my laptop connected to like a big LCD, and, you know, I was like, hey, let's really test this product. I don't want you to give me any instructions. I actually want to go through, and without any guidance, I want to pull in and set up multi-cloud networking. And I was able to go through and pull in from all three public cloud providers, the big ones, all the networking, set up like I think 5 or 10 different segments, set up groups, tag resources, ping across like VMs in different clouds. I was able to do all that like in under an hour. It was truly amazing.
Both of you have said something here or alluded to something that I think is important. Like Matt, you were saying, hey, we can get these people working on things that are more valuable than fussing with all these details. And William, you just kind of made the point, I just put this thing together and it's working. But there are going to be some engineers that are listening to this going, yeah, but I want to know all the little details and how it works. I'm scared that it's going to hide too much stuff from me and then it's going to break. What's your message to these people that are overthinking things like this, and or maybe they're control freaks?
So that's actually a pretty big challenge, right? Because I think there's quite a bit of that, and I think what, you know, what we see is there is enough happening in our environment that we can't get to it all. And just the ability to move quickly on these things, I think, has been hugely valuable for our business. And that lets our direct customers, right? So our business customers of our IT services, you know, they get more confidence that we can achieve their objectives in the right time frame. So while you do lose a little bit of that geekiness under the hood, right, I think that you gain so much more in achieving those business objectives.
I would agree. And I was sort of hazed with this at the point of coming into cloud in the first place, because me as a network guy and setting up, you know, BGP, have my VRF and everything set up, and I want to look at the cloud side. I want to see ARP on this virtual network gateway. And you know what? And the cloud provider, no, you're not looking under the hood here, you know. tough luck. And
that's actually, that's a really good point, William, where moving just into the cloud native networking, right? You instantly lose a lot of visibility into how your network works anyhow. So it's not like you're going to be, you know, accessing the config on that iOS router anyhow. With the Alkira platform, they're starting to expose more and more of that information to where we can see, you know, better traffic flows and what's happening and those kind of things versus some of the just pure gaps that exist in the cloud provider's networking capabilities.
I guess this would have serious impacts on your security as well, because you would have a situation where putting together the network and keeping the integrity of the network together in a multi-cloud environment, you would never be overly confident that you actually have everything covered or that something's not misconfigured. Like if you're working on the permission systems in GCP and trying to match it up with IAM on AWS, the identity access control, there's a fairly big risk that you actually miss something and you leave yourself open to a breach.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I think, you know, one of the first things that really stood out to us is just the level of segmentation that's available and the ease of implementing segmentation. William kind of alluded to how easy that interface was. You know, I like to think about it kind of like if you can run Visio, you can run the Alkira platform.
That's a big call. Are you serious about that?
For real, it's drag and drop, right? You choose the services you want, you choose the clouds you want to connect to, you choose, you know, what locations and whether that's a VPN or SD-WAN or however you want to connect on your end, and you click provision and it's go.
I don't know about you all, but I've had trouble making Visio do things for me in the past. Visio is not an easy tool. I would say that this is probably easier than Visio.
I was thinking that, and I didn't want to say
just,
it.
Just throwing it out there. 100 people probably just rolled their eyes.
We're talking to a bunch of network guys here, right? So Visio, I wasn't going to say PowerPoint. Come on.
I'm not sure that using PowerPoint to drive the network would be a feature. That sounds more like a bug to me.
I think that's a good point, though. That was a really good point in saying, too, that like once you configuring everything is really awesome. You know, we have our segments. We can easily configure things. But how do we prove that those segments are actually working the way that those segments are supposed to be working? How do we remain compliant? And how do we give that data to security? How is it easy for them to consume and for them to feel confident that what this is doing is what it's doing?
So, yeah, I mean, and that kind of goes to even things like firewall services, right? Where that's, again, one of those VNF that you can just deploy within the Alkira platform. And that's growing as far as what capabilities there are, you know, what firewall vendors and such. And those can tie right into your existing management consoles. They can do auto provisioning, things like that. So it really is that easy way of deploying potentially the services that I already use today and lock them right into my management systems to not just from a networking perspective, but from a security perspective as well, being able to give those, those the right people the access they need to that as well.
So, Atif, you're the CTO and you're part of you're the person who's to some level designed the Alkira system. The key thing here is not just an overlay network that connects the different nodes together. There's also a virtual instance that you put in where it's needed. So if I need a load balancer or a firewall or a filter, you actually instantiate the instances. And I think that's a key differentiator between your multi-cloud networking and other people's, is that you're actually using this virtual instance to add features where it's needed.
Yes, absolutely. So it's not just as I was saying earlier, it's not just about connectivity anymore when you say multi-cloud networking. So here, yes. So you can bring as I said, instantiate these services wherever you have a CXP. So CXP is a kind of a virtual colo. So you again put these services based on your use cases, and then these services are not necessarily inline. So it's not like you have on-prem traffic coming in, going through whatever services, then connected or sitting there and then wherever it's going. It's all based on your use case, on your policy.
So one of the things that I see about the Alkira product, which sets it apart from other solutions, is a lot of the other multi-cloud technologies sort of have a configuration engine, and they'll go and configure whatever is in the other person's cloud. So, you know, you have a software controller and it configures the GCP networking and the AWS and the Azure networking. And it says, we'll give you a consistent configuration, but the only way to do that is to dumb it down to the lowest, dumbest features that all of them support. So you don't, you know, and the implementation of load balancing between AWS and GCP and Azure is highly incompatible, and they don't do the same features at all. So you end up with this sort of gaps in the coverage. You can do this on that cloud, but not this on that cloud. And whereas Alkira has taken an approach that it's got to be consistent everywhere, and the way to do that is to put this virtual instance in so that I can have the same features wherever I am.
Yes, exactly. So we have built our own infrastructure. So the customer is onboard onto our own infrastructure. So then that's how we are able to like take care of all the underlying, let's say, limitations of each cloud. So, you know, with AWS, if you're going into a VPC, you cannot load balance to or do ECMP to a VPC, whereas VNet lets you do that. So all of that stuff, customer doesn't need to should need to know whether you're going to be using a VGW to connect to a VPC or whether you're using a TGW. It should, from a customer's point of view, should only be based on, oh, I need like, let's say, 2 gig connectivity into my VPC. A VGW is not going to give you that. So you just give us a requirement. You say, this is the connectivity I want, and we make that happen.
It would have been nice to know that ahead of time.
Yeah.
before we learn the hard way on those things, you know?
Yeah, because it's like a 1 gig maximum into a virtual gateway or something like that, isn't it?
Right.
It's 1.2 gig through VGW.
Right. So if you wanted to do 2 gig, you had to find some way. But you're saying that Alkira will just automatically load balance that and work out what has to happen underneath.
Exactly. So as a customer, if I'm a customer, I don't need to learn like how am I going to use TGW? How am I going to do VPC attachments from TGW? If I have to like insert a firewall in there, how am I going to manipulate the route tables in there? So all of that stuff doesn't need to be your worry. You just give us the requirements, we make it happen. But one thing I want to go back to quickly is you mentioned that since we are abstracting everything, so network engineers are going to get a bit uncomfortable that, oh, is it even working? How is it all happening? So I think that's a very good point. So if I'm an engineer, I want that visibility. So I want like where the routes are coming, what are all the different, let's say, metrics I need to know about performance and whatnot, how traffic is flowing from one side to another. So all of that visibility needs to be there. As long as I have all the visibility, I have all the controls as far as like what routes I need to send into like, let's say, a VPC. Let's say you have an IGW in a VPC, you're getting you have a default route pointing to IGW. Now I cannot send the default route from my network, from Alkira service into your VPC. If you have an IGW and you want to use the IGW, so you may want to keep using the IGW. So then you have to send more specific routes or aggregates So all those controls need to be there for the network engineer. Otherwise, yes, I would be very uncomfortable that, oh, how is it all happening? It might break.
I need visibility because I have to be able to troubleshoot it, or at least to know, have some confidence that I understand what's happening under the hood if you want to. So some people will take the view that as long as it's working as it is, that's fine. That's all I need to know. Move on. I've got other problems. And there's going to be other people whose job it is to actually understand what happens under the hood and to learn what's going on so that if something goes wrong, they can understand, you know, how to fix it or rectify it or come back to you to work with you to solve a problem, right, if that happened. So I think there's what you're saying to me is you're not locking the engineer, the customer out of seeing what's happening under the hood if they want to. It's there. But what we're also hearing Matt and William say is it's very easy to use and consume. You don't have to know this if you don't want to.
Exactly. That was our vision when we started. We wanted to make it very simple to use from a customer's point of view, but also make it very feature-rich and comprehensive from the functionality perspective. In day two operations, you know, we realize that day two operations are very important. So you have to have all that visibility. You have to have all those controls. So without that, it's a no-go.
William, we talked a little while ago about security, and I want to loop back around on that because I mentioned that this must make security better, but it would also make auditing better. So because you indicated that getting an auditor to understand EVPN and BGP and MPLS configurations is quite difficult, with the Alkira, potentially it should be a lot more straightforward and the capabilities of the micro-segmentation are superior.
I would say that because it depends on, you know, at the end of the day, our security folks, they have like the best intentions in mind with how to secure, you know, a corporate infrastructure. Because really, they're on the chopping block if anything happens. You know, if there's some sort of breach or something that goes south, it's on them. So with that being said, sometimes I feel like we, based on, say, we get into cloud, we have a deployment, and based on what we know about cloud at that time, where we are as an organization, like where cloud providers are with the way they do things, we put in some design. And maybe things that we did at that time do not make sense for the world we live in today. So with that being said, you know, maybe we have at some point overused VRFs, for instance, or overused the ability to create firewall contexts on an ASA. You know, maybe
many SD-WAN nodes and too many local breakouts and diversions and stuff. Yeah,
exactly. Because segmentation is really awesome, and you have to do it to meet certain requirements. But oftentimes, you know, is it just meeting the requirements, or did we kind of overdo it? Have we made it overly complex beyond what the requirements were in the first place? So, in looking at like how to show compliance to maybe a security team or some sort of auditing, you know, something compliant in nature, how do I take them through? Okay, I have 50 VRFs on these ASRs, and these 50 VRFs are, you know, segmenting, you know, in this cloud environment, it's doing it per maybe like a VPC. In this environment, it's doing it per environment or per function. And then mapping these down to firewall contexts, and then
that's a really major challenge in the cloud. Is this mapping, you know, this VPC to that VRF, but that VPC might have 10 applications and might belong to three different VRFs, and you end up with all these manual hacks trying to keep them all together.
Yeah, exactly. Even in the cloud providers themselves, like in like Azure, for instance, when you really get in deep in the network architecture. From the VNet level, you have like an address space, like an overarching address space that you assign.
Yeah.
So that's very broad, but within the actual VNet itself, you create, you know, maybe subnets within SGs that tie back to tiers of an application, if you will. And that might look different than the way you would do it in GCP or the way you would do it in AWS.
Yeah.
Well, I think another piece of this, right, is just the again the ease or the visualization of it. Back to the Visio reference, right, is you can see those things in the interface, right? You can see different color-coded networks, different named networks, and how they're connected and where they're not connected. And that drives a lot of clarity as well.
So the graphical interface would actually be quite a lot of help, I think. And it's not dumbing you down. Atif was saying that all the visit information, if you want it, is there and available. But it also means you can actually very high level scan across your network and see exactly where everything is.
Yeah, I would say that me personally, I am not a GUI kind of person. The graphical user interface is not my cup of tea. I'm doing everything in code, or I'm doing it in the CLI or through Linux, whatever. I've never been a fan of UIs because they never give me what I want quick enough. I think this is like one of the first UIs that I've actually really enjoyed working with, that I've actually wanted to work with more. It's a very weird feeling for me because this is not me. So changing me also.
But I think you hit on something really powerful there too, right? Is the entire platform is enabled through APIs. So if you want to use the GUI, you can. If you want to use your scripting, you can do that as well. And it's, you know, it's pretty flexible either direction.
So if you want to stitch it into your ServiceNow or some other help desk platform to do certain tasks, you can start to get into that.
Exactly. So
Matt, one thing I wanted to ask you about is you touched on having an SD-WAN network that you started with. And I've got an idea that you can sort of stitch these together, because part of what you do in the public cloud is you want to integrate your SD-WAN directly with the public cloud. So if you've got resources hosted in public clouds, you want to have the SD-WAN micro-segmentation integrated. Is that something that you're doing now, or is that something that you were able to get?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we started our SD-WAN journey back when Atif was with Viptela before the Cisco acquisition. And that capability is built right into the Alkira platform as well. So it becomes, that's how you connect. That's a way you can connect into the Alkira platform, is just to extend your SD-WAN overlay directly into that. Makes it really easy to you know, build that connectivity. You can also do it through VPN as well. And you know, that lets you do from, whether that be a third party or a firewall or another type of router as well.
And acquisition, somewhere along the prep here, I can't remember if it was Matt or William, was saying that acquisition suddenly changed when you started to have this capability.
Yeah, so I think that goes back to, you know, in the beginning, we were talking about all the capital expenditure and the life cycle of hardware and things like that. So being able to do very simple on-ramps and off-ramps and being able to connect diverse networks and seeing the segmentation there, you know, now in a on-demand as a service capability, I can spin that up. And if I need it for 30 days or 30 months, then I just use it and then spin it down and throw it away, right? There's none of that heavy iron underneath it.
Well, I think that's just about all that we have time for today's show. I want to say thanks so much to William Collins for coming on the show to talk about his experience, and Matt from Koch Industries. It's been so great to have you on the show. William, why don't you tell people where they can find you on the internet?
Yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn, William-Collins, or Twitter, WCollins502.
And Matt, if people want to find you and have a chat to you, where can they find you on the internet?
Yeah, best place for that is probably LinkedIn, Matt Hoag. I don't think there's too many Matt Hoags out there.
That's H-O-A-G.
H-O-A-G, yep.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's great to hear stories from people who are actually using the product. Sometimes when we talk to vendors, we can get the same story out, but hearing you guys actually been using this for a while and Alkira is just starting to come into the market, you wouldn't have heard of them. So hearing from you has been a real different take. So I really appreciate you taking the time. And thanks to Alkira for sponsoring today's show. If you want to find out more, you'll be able to register for a free trial of the Alkira service at alkira.com. That's A-L-K-I-R-A, and have your multi-cloud network come to life in minutes. Now, there'll be all the details you need there. Just click on, you can register now and request a demo, all the things that you need. And as William and Matt have said, you can literally set this up and start working on your multi-cloud within minutes. I've actually seen the demo of that as part of the prep for this and the briefings on what Alkira is doing. I actually did see this get done. And a lot of what they say, now these people have done it more than me, so I'm going to be a little bit more cautious because I haven't done it in anger, but it does seem to be true that the Alkira stuff is certainly where you want to be with networking, because you've got so much that you have to bring together. So thanks very much to Alkira for sponsoring today's show. And you can find this and many more fine free technical podcasts along with our community blog at packetpushers.net. You can follow us on the Twitter as @packetpushers. Find us on LinkedIn and rate us on Apple Podcasts. And as always, remember that too much networking would never be enough.